Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
Each week, we'll be discussing the stories we're working on and which you can read more about in the City Press.
So this week, Mapalo, you wrote about the sort of thorny issue or contentious issue about whether women manage money better than men. And I think this is an important topic. This is not a man versus woman. This is about, I think, women feeling empowered to manage money and understanding perhaps the effects around women and money.
Absolutely, Maya. So again, it is not men versus women. It's really just about the fact that, you know, women have never been used to managing money from a long time ago. But now that we're empowered, women are working, women are CEOs, we are really looking into their behavior when it comes to investing for the long term.
Absolutely. Because I've often thought about that, why women don't feel comfortable. And often, you know, in a traditional relationship, the woman has left the finances to the man. And I've really looked at this and tried to understand it. I think it is historical in the sense that certainly when I grew up, my dad went to work. And because he had the job, the retirement fund was you know, part of his job. His medical aid, all of that was with his business. My mom looked after the children. So she kind of thought, well, he was looking after the money. But the reality is that actually who was looking after the money was the company. It wasn't actually the man. So when we had this huge shift to defined contributions, when pension funds started to be put in the hands of the individual, the cracks started to show that actually just because the company used to look after the money, now suddenly that poor man who was, you know, thought he was looking after the money actually wasn't and now has the responsibility of doing so. And there was this belief that men did it better. But so many studies show now that actually women are better at managing money, especially long-term finances around kids.
Absolutely, Maya. And I think that's such an important distinction also, the fact that they never really used to manage the money themselves. It was done by the companies, but things have changed drastically since then. And so why do women seemingly manage money better? I think it's because of their character. You know, we are able to set a goal and really just stay the long haul and say, you know what, I will achieve this thing. Whereas with men, oh, you know, you hear something at a braai, oh, this is the most happening stock. I made tons of money, you know, I'm paying my children's school fee for the next 5 years with all the profit that I made. You know, they're able to have that kind of a conversation. I don't even know, Maya, if you can call it a conversation, really, because it's really just an ego, right?
I thought I should mention, Apollo, that I've got sitting with me, I've got, you know, Sean and Sean Saunders. Sean Saunders from Revex. I keep calling him Saunders. So please, everyone, it is Sean Saunders. And Louis Bates from Revex, because we're touching base with them again on crypto. So I thought this is just an interesting topic for them as well to be part of, because, of course, crypto is like one of the big things we see about women and behavior is that women tend to be a lot more risk adverse. So exactly those conversations around the braai, women tend to be more worried about goals such as their children. A lot of research shows this. Old Mutual Savings Investment Monitor found this as well, that a woman will prioritize kind of, well, how are we going to achieve goals? And there was a US fund manager, actually, or a financial advisor who was on a panel discussion that I was attended, and I was listening to her, and she said, what she often found was that when a man or a woman came to see her, they had different conversations. So the man would say exactly that. What is my return? How much money am I going to make? When will I double my money? A woman wanted to know a lot more about meeting her goals. So it would be, I need to educate my child. I need to do this. They would also ask a lot more questions. So you had to get things around costs and detail. So her woman clients, female clients, tend to be a lot more detail orientated, where the male client tends to be a lot more return focused. So again, that kind of brings out a different, a different sort of, I suppose, investment ethos. So maybe that's the question to Louis and Sean on crypto. Do you have any crypto female crypto clients?
So yeah, Ma, thanks very much for having us today. We do have female crypto clients, and we operate in a slightly different world to, I think, the traditional investment exchanges in South Africa, crypto investment exchanges like Luno or Valor. Generally speaking, those exchanges allow you to buy one or two different cryptocurrencies. And what we do is we allow you to buy a bundle of cryptocurrencies. And that is slightly more responsible and it's more diversified, and it's all the good things that you hear about investments. So we do have female clients, but we've got far more male clients. And probably to the extent of about a 90-10 male-female split. And that is a big problem. So I think whatever's going on in the traditional investing world is almost exacerbated in the crypto world. And that's something that we've seen since we've started. But we are seeing more interest from women. And I think the product that we have is better suited to women. And it's very interesting because this is like a very human conversation to have, where you're saying, why are men more prone to be investing in cryptocurrencies and in equities, as an example, these high-risk products? Is that an egotistical thing? I probably would say that it is. If I look at my parents, again, my dad is actually far more risk averse. So it's not always that case, but I think it's more often than not that it is that case.
I mean, back to that point, Maplo, I mean, you see a lot of female clients, and do you find that they are very risk averse? So that is part of the challenge, is that they're not taking on enough risk.
Absolutely, Maya. So one of the things that is really, really prevalent in the clients that I do see, one, they're even afraid to go into the market because they think to themselves, what if I lose my money, right? So already just that barrier is existent with women, that, you know what, I don't want to lose my money. I would rather have it somewhere where I know that in a year's time, in 2 years' time, in 3 years' time, it will be there. But then the conversation is that, you know what, for you to really maximize and get returns on your money and beat inflation, you will have to get into the market. But interestingly enough is that once they start investing, they stick it out. They absolutely stick it out. You will never hear them halfway through saying, oh no, I read through the newspaper that, oh, this is the best performing thing. Maybe we need to go that route. So I think for them, once they make that decision to invest, then they're able to stick it out much longer.
So they tend to do a little bit, take a little bit more convincing, need a little bit more research before they make the move. But once they've made the move, they kind of commit to it. And they understand it. So do they not get caught up then in the sort of the next best sort of investment opportunity?
No, absolutely not. I think sometimes even to their detriment, Maya, because I've had women who came for a coaching session and I said, have you even looked at your portfolio in the last 3, 4, 5 years? And they said, no, I took it out ages ago with this wonderful financial advisor who came to me. But then you look at it and you're like, actually, this, what was the goal, you know? So it's almost really to their detriment at the end of the day that, you know, they don't go back and say, you know what, am I still in line with the goals that I do want to make?
And Sean or Louis, do you find that once, you said once women do take it, they do tend to be good investors. And I sort of see what you were saying, Sean, about why the Revex product would be more, and I can sort of, okay, as an investor in it myself, what I liked about it was the spreading of risk. So I don't want to try and guess whether, you know, which crypto is going to do better than the other, but I just want to know I have exposure, a diversified approach. Do you think that is appealing? Maybe you really want to comment on that?
Yeah, I would say so. I think one thing that we've realized, especially from interacting with our clients, is that people use the term saving, investing, and trading interchangeably a lot of the time, whereas we found that people who use the word save are more interested in not losing money. People who use the word trade are actually sometimes there to have fun. So men usually like trading. They like up and down, things like that, but they'll call it investing, right? But saving essentially bleeds into investing, where you actually start trying to beat like inflation. So it takes a little bit of risk to start making the returns make sense on that side. So we kind of see that, I'd say back to the point, women essentially are more risk averse, but when they do get in, they will invest. And that is a long-term decision on good principles, which is where the Revex product comes in on the diversification. Whereas men are more likely to bounce between these things and almost need to be reined in to say, you're trading, come and invest. So Revex, the product essentially with that diversification, works both ways towards this term of investing.
I mean, I think that's such an interesting point because there was analysis done of fund managers between men and male and female fund managers, and they actually found that over the long term, women fund managers outperform male fund managers. And the reason for that was exactly your point, is they don't trade so much. And there's trading costs. And you may, and there is, I suppose, there must be a slight ego in that thinking, well, this will do better than that, and I think I can outdo the market. Whereas a more buy and hold strategy tended to actually outperform because you didn't have all those trading costs. So that, I think that ties in quite well, interestingly, Louis, to your role. So, I mean, Mapulo, when you sit with a woman, a you know, female client, who's sort of saying, you know, I have these goals, but I feel the two things I always find, they definitely like cash and property. But the minute you talk about shares, they start to feel that it's beyond their understanding. That's also what I find. It's like, oh, no, that's complicated. Whereas there's actually seriously there's nothing different between the cells between your ears. I can assure you, it is not more complicated for a woman than for a man. So, how do you overcome that?
Yeah, unfortunately, Maya, you know, I always go back to the cost perspective. So, for example, a lot of people like property, and you know, there's this property craze. Oh no, I want to put my money in property, it's safe, and it's all sorts of things. But I say, what is the cost to invest in property, right? Buying a physical property will cost you an arm and a leg compared to buying maybe a share or unit trust or an exchange-traded fund that just invests in property on your behalf. So for me, it always comes back down to cost and saying, you know what, these are the costs, the actual cost of owning a property. They're quite high, right? And again, we go back to diversification. Are you diversifying enough? Now, if you're in South Africa, you're holding a property portfolio, you're holding your retirement here, literally everything sitting here. So that's the kind of conversation that we normally have to go back and forth with. But also, again, it's about communication when it comes to women. You really just have to take them through the process and let them disagree with you, come back, look at the numbers. You know, it has to be very consultative. You can't just push down a product to them.
Well, that's such an interesting point, because I must tell you, financial advisors struggle with that, specifically male advisors, because they do get irritated that they don't feel the woman trusts them straight up. And that is true. They often will say that she'll go and talk to her friends or somebody else and then come back with more questions. So I think from a financial planner perspective, it can sometimes take a lot longer. So do you find that, you know, you have to do a lot more work and a lot more, and they'll always go and double check everything you say, okay? I don't know if you experience this just in women in your general life, Lou. Sure. But they will double check everything. They don't trust anything you say, and they will come back and question it again. But again, once you have their trust and once they understand the process, you actually have an amazing client for life, often.
But for me, well, I'm also interested to find out, you know, what mistakes do you see both men and women making when they're investing in crypto?
Yes, that's a good point. I mean, you were saying about that. That's a good question, Sean.
There's so many mistakes. It's the same as, you know, investing in property or investing in equities or funds or any investment out there. Really. It's that people focus on a very short-term period. They don't focus on the long-term. They don't focus on diversifying their investments. That's quite typical. I mean, honestly, if you can set yourself a strategy of achieving some sort of growth over a period of time. Like, let's say you want to beat inflation and you're wanting to save up for a house or a holiday or something along those lines. You need to own a diversified portfolio. That's the first thing. The second thing is you need to set your time period that you're wanting to invest. You can't go and invest in property if you're wanting to pull out your money after a year's time. That just doesn't make sense. Cryptocurrency is, because it is highly liquid, meaning that you can buy and sell very quickly, it tends to be an asset class that people want to jump in and out of. And that's probably the worst strategy that you can possibly employ, because then you're at the whim of the market and you're effectively gambling. And I think that's probably the biggest problem that we've seen with both sexes. And ultimately, a long-term approach, that doesn't mean that your strategy needs to stay fixed, but a long-term approach where you approach an asset class with the idea of investing for 2 to 5 years, that's probably the best way to go about doing that. And as Maya said, you know, that reduces fees materially, which is probably one of the biggest determinants or things that you can control when it comes to investing.
So one of the things I'd like to ask you, Sean, is, you know, my investment strategy around crypto is not to trade it. In fact, I just have to quickly, as a side point here, I was chatting to a chap who used to trade cryptos, and he said he was up at the middle of the night, absolutely wasn't sleeping, because the movements are so dramatic and so volatile that he realized he was going to give himself a heart attack, and he just decided to can the whole lot. And now he's trying to decide what to invest in. So exactly, you can get into that trading mentality that's actually quite unhealthy. But when there is such volatility, surely there's also a buying strategy. So maybe you're still buying for the long term, but you may be buying on a regular basis. Is there something where perhaps you know the price has dropped for a bit, you add a little bit more money in? Is there some way that you can use volatility to grow for the long term?
Oh, certainly. So you can have rand cost averaging. I mean, the more common term is dollar cost averaging. So that means that over a period of time, you would be buying into the market just as the prices move. And that could be up or down. Because if the prices move down, there may be a reason why they're moving down. So you don't necessarily want to go and pop a whole bunch of money into the market. And if the market's trending upwards, there's maybe a reason why the market's moving upwards. And you don't want to miss that opportunity either. So over the period of, you know, 2, 4, 5 months, if you're investing in the market regularly, and let's say that's every single month, and you're putting a small amount away, that means that you're going to get the average price over that period. And that's probably a better way to get into the market. However, you know, if you're looking to invest in crypto, we always recommend that you don't go and invest your life savings. So that's just the silly thing to do in any asset class, whether that be South African property or even just, you know, bonds in general. You need to have a diversified approach, and, you know, that comes with whatever you're investing in. Property, stocks, cryptocurrency, etc.
And I think the other problem with a little bit with crypto, or any of these investments where you make money quickly up front. So I was telling before we started, I was actually telling Sean and Louis about a woman that I met. And this is a woman, by the way, investing in crypto. Mm-hmm. So and she had really timed Bitcoin, right? And she got out before the crash had happened. And she literally made, I don't know how much money in 3 months, like a lot of money that she paid off her car. I mean, it was that kind of money. And yeah. Now she's gone and done the proper thing, Mapula, that you and I would tell her to do, tax-free savings, and she's so bored. And she's saying, but it's not doing anything. In 3 months, I haven't doubled my money. So is there also that sort of, maybe, Louis, is there a way of tempering your expectations just generally about investing?
Yeah, I mean, we see it really, like, all of our customers, really, a lot of the time, is they jump in and out, they'll put money out for certain things, and they'll just say, no, I'm going to put it in again now, and things like that. That's a decent class. But I think, truly, you just have to, like Sean was saying, you have to take a 1 to 2 year view. And there's a reason that a lot of the common knowledge around investment does take that viewpoint, just because of the ups and downs in the market. So there is really no alternative other than to educate yourself on an investment strategy and actually stick to it. And if you're not going to give your money to a financial advisor to do it for you, it's literally as simple as that. You must just do the reading.
And a bit of background as well, just, you know, on how Revix came about. My background's kind of playing around in the hedge fund space, in the specialty investment space. And I used to trade crypto like a madman, and I traded stocks like a madman. I traded all these different things. And you do it, it's an absolute rush. It's like gambling, it's thrilling, it's exciting. But you lose a lot of money before you start making money. And I promise you, you can start making money and thinking you're making money, and you're going to lose a whole bunch more money. So we thought, well, this is a bit ridiculous. You know, most people are out there trying to gamble in crypto. Why don't we create a product that allows you to invest in this market over the long haul without, you know, this kind of ridiculous gambling-like risky mentality? And I think that's, you know, a big play of why we are who we are and why we do what we do.
I mean, I must just add to Sean's comment there. Simon Brown. So Simon Brown, many of you listen to this podcast, probably listen to Fat Wallet, which is also part of his OneLap. And Simon once told me, Simon is a long-term investor, but also trades. And he said to me, for the first 10 years of trading, he would have been better off buying a Satrix top 40 and just putting his money in there for 10 years. He said it took him 10 years before he developed his investment strategy. He got rid of all those adrenaline kicks and learned to put his proper strategy in place of making money. Mm-hmm. So he took 10 years to figure it out. Yeah. So very important.
But for me, what I'm interested in, I mean, we've been talking about women and the mistakes that they have made. What mistakes have you guys made when you were investing in crypto?
Oh, beautiful question.
Now, look, my biggest mistake, I'm sure you will have a different set of mistakes, was during the run-up in 2017, it would, you know, if you were investing in Bitcoin, and I mean, I can go into all the other different cryptocurrencies, Ripple, Ethereum, Litecoin, etc. I mean, you'd wake up in the morning, the first thing you'd do is you'd look at your portfolio, and it would be up. And yeah, I was investing a couple hundred thousand rand at that point in time, and that couple hundred thousand rand had turned into a couple million rand. And when you have like 3-4 million rand playing in a game, and the market goes up another 10%, there's a huge kick. But then there's the same kind of, oh, wait, should I maybe be moving my money from the market? And you sit and you hesitate and you become obsessed with it. and that's the only thing you focus on. And then you get overconfidence bias because you think you know all about the market because you're obsessed with this and you're reading all the Twitter feeds and doing all of that, and the market goes up another 10%, and then you go and you put more money in and you continue running up this market. And then when it pops, you lose a lot more money that you've put in and a lot of money that you obviously made. And when the market comes down, generally it comes down a lot faster than it goes up. And so my biggest risk, my biggest issue with investing, my biggest problem with investing was kind of gaining overconfidence bias very early on and not putting up my money when I should have.
Mm. Yeah, mine's a bit different there. My biggest mistake with crypto was that I was playing around with the tech of crypto during just before the massive spike. And we were trying to build a competitor to Luno that had Ethereum before them. And I never quite just clicked that I was I should put money into it.
So you were buying the tech for us and investing in it.
I was we can put this and customers definitely want this because the price is most definitely gonna go up. All of these different things. Just forgot to invest. I didn't even get to come down with it.
And Mavala, talking about mistakes, did I tell you about that blog that I read? I think it was Sunil Feldman's blog. I'm gonna actually pop it in. I'll pop in the link into this podcast. She wrote something about listening to your gut. And how many people think their gut really can tell them important things? And it's actually probably indigestion. It's not your gut feeling. And she talks about how a real gut feeling is probably Simon Brown's experience after 10 years of trading. Maybe by then you've developed enough experience, you've had enough experience to actually be able to know that there's something's going on. But in the beginning, you seriously think, well, my gut's telling me something. And that could be possibly the biggest mistake. And I suspect, Sean, that was what you were.
Yeah.
It was this gut. We really put a lot of belief in our stomachs or something.
Yeah, we do. I think it's actually really important to be involved in an investment that actually goes sour and to realize that, because it's a very different thing when you're in an investment and it really goes down and you feel miserable and sad and all the rest that goes along with that, because you learn a lot. And you will experience that if you invest. It will just happen. It doesn't matter how diversified you are. You'll have a certain investment that goes bad. But that comes back to the point of diversification and why you need to have this portfolio that spans stocks, bonds, property, crypto, and all the rest.
And I think also learning from it to not stay away from it forever. Because I saw that very much in when we had the crash in 2007, 2008. We had people who climbed in the market because the market had a massive rally. Before then, from sort of 2004 to 2007, the market really, really ran up high. And so, of course, everybody was climbing in, expecting their money to, go up quickly. So when it crashed, and it crashed by 50%, you're talking about the crashes are often bigger than the runs, people said, that's it, I'm going into cash, I'm never going to invest in the market again. And that is a mistake. Your strategy error is not the error of the market. You've got to understand that your strategy was the problem and not the underlying asset.
And I think if you look over the long run, if you look at generally a lot of stocks that have a very long trading history, there's steep pullbacks where you see 50 to 80% pullbacks from market collapses that end up being a little blip on this longer term chart. And it's very important to realize that and remain invested in some cases. I mean, not always, given that you do have the likes of Steinhoff that's happened, but who knows, maybe they're going to have a little blip. I'm not definitely not advocating to buy Steinhoff shares, definitely not. But, this crypto as an example, the crypto fall that we saw in 2018. We believe that that's going to be a little blip on the longer term radar.
Yeah. And I mean, it is very, very true. And one of the interesting things is that I often talk about this. You were talking about rand cost averaging or dollar cost averaging. So I started putting money away for my son when he was 2 years old. I mean, I promise you, I was putting away 200 rand a month or something, and then 300 rand away a month. And by the time he was 12, it was worth 100,000. And one of the reasons for that was the crash of 2007, 2008, because I kept buying whilst the market was crashing. Sure. So, sometimes if you have that rand cost averaging approach, you don't have to worry about market crashes. In fact, somebody put on my Twitter feed, because I did something about Black Friday, and they said, I wish the JSC would have a Black Friday. I said, absolutely. You need one major crash every few years so we can make money. Because that's how you make money. You buy in the crash. But of course, nobody does, because when that pooped or something. It's that kind of thing. So and to overcome that gut feel or those emotions, that rand cost averaging for me is 101. It's just do it. You don't get then emotional highs and lows. You're just putting your money away.
Yeah. But just out of interest, I don't know if we covered this in our last podcast. If you've invested and you put your money through the platform, the Rubik's platform, and now you think, okay, you know what, I've invested for the past 5 years, I've met my goal. how easy is it to get the money in, you know, rent?
Yeah, very easy. You basically just go into your account and request a withdrawal, and it'll be in your account within 24 hours, depending on the bank.
Ah, okay. All right. Because that's one question someone asked me and said, you know what, maybe if I put it there for 2 years, how easy is it? Or do I have to go sell and do all sorts of things to get some money back? Okay. All right.
No, it's very simple. I mean, it's like buying and selling shares, really. I mean, it's similar. It's just the platform, very easy to use.
Well, look, there's one beauty of crypto versus equities or stocks, and that's that there's no second-day settlement. So in South Africa, you've got a T+2 system. JSE has a T+2 system, which means that when you sell your share, you have to wait 2 days before you can withdraw your money. And the beauty with crypto is that you can get into an investment, out of an investment, whatever suits you. And I mean, that's just part and parcel of investing, is that sometimes you need the money, you need the liquidity. And there's a beauty with crypto that you can get your money very quickly.
Yeah. Excellent. So, Napola, are you now going to be telling your female clients about crypto, or do they ever ask?
No, absolutely. They do ask, Maya. Especially, you know, like they mentioned earlier, you know, it's not about men or women. Some women really do like a bit of risk. So those who do, they actually do ask me, so where do I go? I'm like, I don't know. But definitely I think the Revix platform is a good platform, because, you know, you're not putting all your eggs in one cryptocurrency. But for me, you know, as we've mentioned, it does show that women really just take some time. What do you think, you know, what do you need to do as an industry to attract more women?
Jeez, the cryptocurrency industry has got a ton to do before it attracts more women. I mean, it's this weird thing, right? So you go to a bri or you go to a dinner party or whatever, you'll see men talk about money and women don't talk about money on average. I mean, that's something that hopefully will change over the next few years. But it starts where you arrive there and you talk to one of your girlfriends about an investment or about something like that. And that just starts this process. I think it's been very slow to get going, but it's what you need. Get going, and we need to do it in the cryptocurrency world. Hence, why we're having these podcasts, and why we really are partnering up with Future Females next year to push women investing in crypto. But you know, unless you take risk, and I think this is probably the most important thing that we can kind of push home, is that unless you take risk, you can't expect to make returns. And it's the simple game of life. It doesn't matter if that's your career or if that's investing. You have to do that. You can't take excessive risk, because then you put yourself in financial ruin. You could be out on the street. You could be unemployed. You could do all these different things. But you need to take a level of risk, and you need to understand what kind of risk you're going to take. And I think that's the most important thing that you need to understand. And women need to understand, men need to understand, everybody needs to get.
Excellent. Well, I want to say thanks to you guys for joining us today. And I think, Mapulo, the comment you made to me was, you know, the most important thing when it comes to women and finances is to start investing. Don't wait. Don't procrastinate. Ask the questions. Do the homework. But don't, out of fear, don't overthink it.
Start small.
Start small.
Let it get bigger.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the great thing. You don't ever have to commit your life savings to it. Mm-hmm. Or any investment. You can start small. Use rand cost averaging.
So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.